What do you call two guys that were there when this happened?
Back to return at Spurlock. Michael Spurlock at the 10. He's to the 20. He's to the 25. For the 30. To the 40-yard line. We could see history. 50. 40. To the 30-yard line. Run, Michael. Run, Michael. Run, Michael. Run. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. There you go.
And that
62-yard field goal attempt. It is
good.
It's good.
Good. Good. Good. Box beat the Eagles.
Who can forget?
Gannon looking. Gannon throws up the middle. It's intercepted at the 30. Derrick Brooks, 30. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Derrick Brooks, the most valuable player in the National Football League. There it is. The dagger's in. We're going to win the Super Bowl.
We call them the Salty Dogs.
Welcome back to the Salty Dogs Podcast. I'm Scott Smith.
And I am Jeff Ryan.
And we are the Salty Dogs.
We are.
I would say welcome back to the podcast, Jeff, but, I mean, we're both coming back at the same time. How can I welcome you back?
Well, that's true.
It's like when flight attendants, you land. Were you about to say the same thing?
No.
When you land, when you're on a flight with flight attendants and then you land, they always say, hey, welcome to Tampa. I'm like, you just got here. How are you welcoming us?
No, I was going to say, welcome, listeners. Welcome back. That's what I was going
to say. We were here before them.
Yes. Yes.
It kind of works that way.
Yeah. We have to start before they finish.
So, Jeff, we're going to chop it up about the draft. We're going to spend most of our time talking about the draft.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get to that, the most recent great news is the Buccaneers are playing the Seahawks in Munich on November 13th. That's week 10 of the season. It's exciting to know who and when that game is going to be. We've known for some time that we were going to be there and that we are the designated home team. First NFL game ever to be played in Germany, regular season or preseason.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a really nice NFL fan base there. I bet you they fill that stadium with no problem.
Oh, yeah. I thought there was something like 500,000 requests.
Wow, for 75,000.
Yeah, for tickets already, because I guess it's going to be like a lottery.
It's a cool-looking stadium. Have you looked it up online?
I did.
Allianz Arena, I think.
Yeah, that was the first thing I was looking at.
I think they have all these, like, what would you call it?
Outside lights.
Yeah, but they're little cells. They're a bunch of, so they can change, they can light them up in different colors.
Yes, and I'm trying to, you know, last time we were in London at Tottenham Stadium.
Which was very cool.
Which was very cool. It was like an NFL stadium, had broadcast booths.
Locker room was cool.
Right. So I don't know if we're going to be broadcasting outside or inside. So I'm hoping inside because November, it is wintertime, so it could be chilly.
Huh. Yeah. So you're much more well-traveled than I am. Have you been to Germany?
I have. I've been to Munich, yes.
You've been to Munich specifically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Am I going to like it?
Yes. The thing about Munich is it's unfortunately, it was mostly bombed out during World War II.
I would say so, that's unfortunate.
So a lot of the architecture is
new.
Yeah, like that 60s type building style. However, they do have the Glockenstein.
You were talking about that the other day?
Yeah, it's really very, very cool. It's very cool. It's a clock,
okay. And
it's in the in a plaza, and at top of the hour, it does this unbelievable. I mean,
every hour.
Yeah, people come out like it's
in the middle of the night.
Anything that you've ever seen of a cuckoo clock or you know clocks, this has everything to it. It tells a story basically. It's pretty cool.
Okay, so does the Autobahn go there?
I would assume so.
I want to rent a car and drive on the Autobahn.
You do? Oh, you just want to see how fast you can take it?
I want to go really, really fast.
Well, you know, in Germany, you know, you've got the Mercedes, you got the BMWs, Porsche or Porsches?
Porsche.
Or Porsche.
That's German? I didn't know that was German.
Uh-huh. Volkswagen.
Well, yes. That's what people came here for, to listen to us talk about cars.
Well, it's kind of exciting because I'm curious how long we'll be over there, though.
I know. I'm hoping for the long trip.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
I know.
I think we're going in on Thursday and fly out Sunday night. It's a six-hour difference.
I wish they would realize that this isn't about Buccaneer football. It's about me getting a vacation.
Well, you know, you have to you kind of have to look at it and say, if we have the bye week afterwards, do you
stay
and extend?
Usually do get the bye week.
Sure.
After.
Yeah. But it is kind of, I thought maybe was trying to figure out why they would put us at, you know, at week 10 in November, you know, being winter and everything. But then I was thinking, well, maybe they didn't want us over there during Oktoberfest, you know. And also, I think, isn't there some, I don't know if it's a World Cup going on or something's going on soccer-wise that they did.
Well, that's where the FC Bayern,
yes,
Munich plays, mm-hmm. And that's a very good team, apparently.
Right.
That brings me to another point before we get to the draft, and that is the schedule is going to drop next week. I don't know when you, the listener, is listening to this. It could be Friday. Or, well, I don't know. Forget we're recording on Friday. It could be Monday, but whatever. It's next Thursday. We know the Germany game.
Yep.
And at 6 o'clock on Thursday night, the 12th, we will be able to announce our first home game of the season. Every team gets to do that at 6. So you could conceivably find out another game.
Sure.
If we happen to be the opponent for another team's first home game.
I totally get the suspense of the schedule, and I respect it, but I hate it, okay? I loved it before, you know, we had to schedule before the draft.
Yeah, but you know why they do
that.
The draft is big enough to carry the news for all that time.
I have that. However, I do want to start planning my life, so to speak, because everything happens as soon as
You find out. Everything.
You just find out what's going on, and you know, just how many primetime games. You have a prediction? Yeah.
I just heard that they increased the maximum to 6.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could get more than 5 if you got flexed at some point, but you could only be scheduled to have 5. But now it's 6. Is that correct?
I'm not sure. I thought it was. I don't know if they said, okay, you can just have 6. I think they like that flex because you don't know how someone's going to be.
They're not
going to
do away with flex. I'm just saying, when the schedule is first announced, the original announcement, no team can have more than 5 home.
Right.
And we have had, for primetime games, since Tom Brady got here,
sure,
we have had the maximum both seasons. And the 2020 was the more telling one because that was before we won the Super Bowl. You would anticipate, no matter who your quarterback is, that the Super Bowl champs are probably going to get the maximum number, right?
Mm-hmm.
We had a ton of primetime games in 2003 as an example.
Yeah, you would hope, right? Yeah.
So, but that year was before the Super Bowl, so that was all just, hey, Tom Brady's there.
Mm-hmm.
That was all Tom Brady factor because we had been 7-9 the previous season, I believe.
Yep, we were.
So to get a maximum that year, well, we still have Tom Brady, and now we have a Super Bowl trophy. And if you look at power rankings right now, which are kind of silly, but whatever, we're considered one of the top Super Bowl contenders.
Sure.
If you look at Vegas odds, we're one of the top odds getters.
We're in contention, let's say that.
So you got a team very much in contention with a very strong roster and Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
I think 5's no question.
Yeah.
If there's a 6 allowed, maybe, but maybe not because we also have the Germany game.
Mm-hmm.
5, I think, is ironclad. That's going to
happen. Well, the thing about the Germany game, it's at 9:30 Eastern time, a.m., and 6:30 Pacific time. So think about if you're a Seahawks fan.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, 6:30 in the morning. Yeah, that's like being in Hawaii during
I didn't even think
season.
About that when I wrote the story and put it, you know, because I was thinking, hey, this is not bad. Most Bucks fans are probably up by 9:30 unless Saturday was really crazy.
Right.
And so you can watch just the Bucks for the first 3 hours.
Now,
of the
is that considered a primetime game since you're the only team playing?
It is not considered a primetime game, but I could see the schedule makers taking into account that the Buccaneers have that game when they're deciding how many primetime games to give.
Do you have any predictions of what games you think will be primetime or anything?
Yeah, I mean, you got to figure the Rams.
Yeah.
I mean, the history between us and the Rams over the last few years.
Especially after that last game.
I would say the Packers, but, you know, when we played the Packers 2 years ago and it was Brady and Rodgers, they put that game at 425.
Yeah.
So that's a nice game to carry your doubleheader for Fox.
Well, that was because Fox protected that game.
And they may do so again.
Sure. They'll fight for certain games to
probably get one of them on in one of our 6 division games, maybe New Orleans again. I mean, I hope not because our primetime games against New Orleans have not been fun.
No, I think there's better teams. You know, you have Kansas City in there.
Yeah.
You have Cincinnati in there.
I know.
So you have 2 Super Bowl teams,
we have both Super Bowl teams and all 4 teams that were in the conference championship games.
The Ravens are in there, too.
Buffalo.
Oh, yeah.
No, we don't have Buffalo. No, we don't. But we do have the Ravens. No, because we're playing the NFC North. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh, that's a good draw. I could see Bucks Steelers.
In Pittsburgh.
That could be one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's out of the question we get a Thanksgiving game.
Well, I was going to say that. And my philosophy on this is we're going to play in Germany on the 13th.
This is, Jeff, is what you and me, what we want to happen.
Yeah. So we play on November 13th in Germany, and then we have the bye week.
Yes.
And then we take the bye week, and then two Thursdays later is Thanksgiving.
Right.
So we would play in Dallas on Thanksgiving Day.
That's what
we would
want.
Then give us another long weekend off and 10 days before the next game, which would bode well in the season.
It's more than you could ask for.
And we haven't had a Thanksgiving game in 15 years.
We've only ever had one.
One.
I think that was 06, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think Mike Alstead scored the first touchdown of the game, and the rest of the game was all Dallas.
Yep. And so
that was a bad season.
Yeah. That was so.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
It's been a very long time. And now the question is, do they want to blow off such a marquee game when people are going to watch anyways?
Yeah.
You know, and then this, and then.
But
this,
for us, we've got such a loaded schedule that most of our games are marquee games this year.
And then this season, Christmas Eve is on Saturday, and Christmas Day is on a Sunday. So they're playing three games on Sundays on Christmas Day. So
that could also be one.
Yeah, for Buck fans, there's going to be a lot going on.
Yeah, all next Thursday week. Night, you're going to find out a lot of really interesting information. We have of all the teams on our schedule, that would be 14 teams.
Right,
17 games. All but Atlanta and Carolina have been in the playoffs either last year or the year before or both. I mean, those are the only two that have any sort of playoff. You know, eight of the teams on our schedule were in the playoffs last year. A couple others like Seattle and Baltimore and New Orleans were not, but those have been historically good teams for a long time now.
Right.
And then that just leaves Atlanta and Carolina who I think Atlanta's like 2016, maybe when they won the Super Bowl.
And both of them may have a new starting quarterback.
One of them will, but both of them may. You just transitioned us right into the main topic for this segment. By the way, we're only going to have two segments today, Jeff, because our second segment, we're very excited. We're going to be introducing to Bucks fans our new team writer and reporter, Brianna Dix.
Brianna Dix. Right?
We call her Bree. She just started with us last week.
Draft day was her starting day.
I know. It's like, hey, welcome to the team.
Now get to work.
Be prepared to be the facility for about 60 of the next 72 hours. Yeah. So enjoy your time.
Well, she got to know her way around for sure.
Well, she definitely got thrown right into the fire and has been producing a lot of good stuff this week, her first full week. Anyway, we're going to get her on here, let her talk about herself a little bit. And I had sent out on Twitter the notification that we were going to be recording one of these later in the week.
I did see that.
And I said, go ahead and send us questions. Well, I don't think that's the best way for us to get questions. By the way, if you want to send us questions,
sure.
Who knows the next time we'll be on, but we'll definitely start up again full time once a week when we hit training camp, I think. And you can send them to saltydogs@buccaneers.nfl.com. Right. Well, the call out on Twitter didn't really work. Only our great super fan from Brazil, Xander, sent us a question.
Aww.
And it is about Bree, and it's a nice question aimed at her. So we might as well just go right into the segment with Bree. Just go from that right into the questions.
Okay.
We don't need to break between, because that's the only one we got.
All right.
We'll get more questions when we get to the season.
That's fine.
So,
The draft.
First of all, do you have any just big picture takeaways of the draft? Not necessarily just us, but a big picture takeaway of what you learned from this year's draft.
Quarterback was not top of the list.
It is amazing how I never would have guessed they'd all fall, other than Pickett, all fall to the third round. Yeah. I can believe it. I can understand it. But I thought it seems like when it comes to quarterbacks, even in bad years for it, teams overdraft them.
And what was it? Like seven straight defensive picks before they got to an offensive player, something like that?
It was six, I believe. The first one, it was five, actually.
All right.
Which is one of the topics I'm going to get to, because that, unfortunately, worked out really, really well for the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah.
The two things that I had trouble when I was trying to do my last mock draft, which did not go well, but it didn't go well for almost anybody, because this draft after the first two picks
that's why mock drafts drive me crazy.
Well, you get clicks, Jeff.
People
read them.
People love them. I got it.
So the two big questions I had as I was trying to do the last one, I'm like, if I don't get these questions right, I might get a zero on this thing in terms of correctly predicting any picks. First, was Jacksonville really going to take Trayvon Walker first overall when for almost the entire lead up It was assumed it'd be Aiden Hutchinson.
Yep.
And if you looked at mock drafts in February, Trayvon Walker wasn't even in the first round. It's the most amazing draft cycle rise of one player that I've ever seen for him to end up going first overall.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing about him is he's got incredible measurables. He looks like he has everything that you think you would need for this guy to be a star pass rusher on the NFL level. And, of course, that's one of the most important commodities you can get, especially in a quarterback-light draft.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't really have that much production. He just didn't. He didn't get put in a role at Georgia where he got to rush the passer enough, and you just don't see that, right? And Aiden Hutchinson is a prospect everybody likes and had the production.
You're right.
But, you know, I went with everything I was reading and went ahead and put Trayvon first, so I got that one right. And Aiden Hutchinson was like a no-brainer to Detroit, too. but it went off the rails.
He's from Detroit, too, isn't he?
He went to the University of Michigan.
Okay.
So why this is bad, it went Hutchinson. Derek Stingley Jr. was the first surprise. Not a pick that people hated.
No.
You didn't see that in a lot of mock drafts. I just was looking at some of them to see if anybody else did well, and they did not. But I will give Todd McShay credit. He actually had Derek Stingley going third in his mock draft. I'm trying to do these mock drafts. I'll readily admit that some of these people, like a Todd McShay or Mel, they do have contacts.
Sure.
I don't think they're getting a ton of good information because GMs just don't want to put out information that will give anything away. But I do think they're getting some, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's proven by him.
Or a tendency.
I didn't see Stingley going third in a lot of mock drafts.
Yeah.
I did see Sauce Gardner going third in some of them. But for Stingley to go above
Gardner.
Boy,
did he have the necklace or did he have the necklace?
He had the Sauce necklace.
Holy smokes, it was...
He didn't have to wait much longer after that. He went fourth.
Uh-huh.
And then Kayvon Thibodeau went fifth. The problem with that, Jeff, is that just made... It just worked out perfectly for Carolina. The other big question I had to figure out is... Is Carolina really going to take quarterback at number six? Are they?
I decided no.
I got that right, but it didn't help.
Right.
Because the first five picks going D, 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 D meant they got to pick the position they needed most of all. Their GM readily admitted it was tackle.
Uh-huh.
It's been a black hole for them for years. They've been needing to get a blue chip prospect to tackle this, and they couldn't have had a better opportunity here because it was a great draft with at least three studs at the top.
Right.
And they ended up getting to pick the very first one. They took Ike Ekwonu from North Carolina State. So they don't have to sit there and try to convince everybody that he was their favorite one if Evan Neal or Charles Cross is already off the board.
Yeah.
They could choose anyone they wanted, and they took Ekwonu. And that sucks. I don't like Carolina getting that.
No, but that's...
I don't like it working out for Carolina.
But you know, it is Carolina, so what they do with it will be a whole other story.
And then Atlanta got to take the very first receiver off the board.
Yeah.
And they took Drake London. My big picture thing, I think your thing on quarterbacks is absolutely like the biggest story.
I don't even remember. Well, you'll probably know. I'm going to ask you, when was the last time a first round went without a quarterback?
Well, that hasn't happened for a very long time, but the last time only one went was 2013.
Okay.
And it was the Florida State guy, I think. Let's see here. I knew I was going to need this.
Well, see, you actually have your laptop. Look at
draft
you.
Draft by position.
Mm-hmm.
This wonderfully helpful site called drafthistory.com.
I was just going to ask that.
It's a great site, and it's updated. Drafthistory.com.
Okay.
It doesn't say NFL draft history, but it is NFL draft history.
Uh-huh.
Draft for positions, you can do it a lot of different ways. Draft for positions by round. So I'm going to go quarterback.
Okay.
Okay. So these are where the quarterbacks went. The first quarterback went in all the years before this. 2021 first, 2020 first, 2019 first, 2018 first,
mm-hmm.
2017 second, 2016 first, 2015 first, 2014 third, and then 2013, E.J. Manuel was taken 16th. And no other quarterback was taken, I think, until the third round. Isn't that the year that we took... man, my memory's going. Long neck. Mike Glennon.
Oh.
Isn't that the year we took Mike Glennon? And he was like the second or third quarterback when we got in the third round.
Long neck.
He has a very long neck.
He does. He does.
I think even at the time, E.J. Manuel, taken by the Bills at 16, was considered a reach at that spot.
Right.
But that is the aberration, because pretty much every other year, until you get back to 2000, I think, there's at least one quarterback in the top three.
Mm-hmm.
first one and this one goes 20th. Pittsburgh didn't have to trade up. I personally predicted them trading from 20 to 15.
That's a very cool story, too.
Yeah, it's neat. Yeah. He doesn't even have to move. He works at the same place.
Yeah, he does. Instead of going to the door on the right, he goes door on the left. And that's true. The entrance on the right side is Pitt. On the left side is the Steelers. And they're separated by almost like another door. But
Even if he wasn't at Pitt, he would... Any quarterback rookie that gets drafted in the first round by the Steelers has to be ecstatic. They have done an awesome job at drafting quarterbacks that have long careers.
And you talk about a stable franchise.
Stable
and
franchise.
You're going into a lot of times, if you're being drafted high, it's usually to a team that's not very good.
Oh, that's exactly right.
And so if a team's not very good, you're either dealing with a new coaching staff or you're dealing with a coaching staff that could be on the ropes.
Or a roster that's not great.
Correct. And so... There's so many facets to it.
I think Atlanta did the right thing here.
Yeah.
If they take a quarterback at 8,
mm-hmm.
who's he throwing to? Kyle Pitts.
Yeah.
That's it. They don't have anybody.
Uh-uh.
So they take the receiver, and then they end up getting Desmond Ridder in the third round,
right.
which also makes me angry because I think Desmond Ridder is going to end up being the best quarterback out of this draft.
Really?
Yeah. I think he'll be starting by next year.
Wow.
Mariota is a bridge, and
sure.
I like Marcus Mariota.
Yeah.
I think he's a fine bridge, but I think it's going to be Desmond Ridder before you know it.
Right.
And that's irritating that they found what I think is a good quarterback in the third round.
In 3 years from now, we'll go to the tape.
I'm going to get to Atlanta here in a minute because I think their draft overall was great,
uh-huh.
and that's unfortunate.
Well, they have a new GM. He's in his, second year?
Yeah, what's his name?
The coach that
Arthur Smith is the coach.
Yeah, that whole coaching staff, front office, is in their second year. Rich McKay is the president. He still remains, but they were doing some good stuff. It all boils down to your scouts, though. As we were talking earlier before we started recording this,
Terry Fontenot.
There you go, and he's done well.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
What were you going to say about...
Well, just it's all about scouting, and I keep thinking about what Jason Light always says, what he's learned being in as a general manager is to trust his staff and take all the input rather than trying to do it all on your own. And I think a lot of teams are starting to do that more and more. Now, if you don't trust your scouting staff, then you're really in trouble. So, and those guys have to fight for their picks, too,
Jason Light... We can't grade this draft yet. We don't know. I think we all feel good about it, and we'll talk about it here in a minute.
Well, I like what Jason Light said, is that I'm not coming up at the podium at the end of the draft and go, wow, I feel like crappy about this draft.
Yeah, boy, did we blow it.
Yeah.
The guy we wanted was sitting right there, and for some reason we didn't take him.
We weren't fast enough.
We went to the third guy on our board. What were we thinking?
Yeah, it fell off the board.
No, but we can look back at his last, four or five drafts, mm-hmm. and the Bucks' recent drafts have been very good.
Excellent.
Which is why the roster was loaded enough to attract Tom Brady. And make him the final piece of the puzzle. And it's why some guys are now starting to get nice, lucrative second-year contracts, not just from us, but from other teams.
Right.
Jordan Whitehead, Alex Kappa. We had one other. O.J. Howard got a decent deal.
Yeah, O.J. went to Buffalo.
Mm-hmm. Ron Jones.
Ronald Jones, yep.
And then Carlton Davis got a good one from us.
Yeah.
I've kind of lost my train of thought.
That's all right. You're talking about picks. Atlanta did really, really well.
Yeah.
You wanted to talk about them.
I wanted to do my big picture takeaway from this draft.
Okay.
And obviously quarterbacks, that's why I was kind of elaborating on your point.
Sure.
Quarterbacks are almost always the story of the draft, and in this case they are because of how far most of them fell.
Right.
But the position that is now gaining on quarterbacks in terms of driving drafts
mm-hmm.
is wide receiver.
Yeah.
And this league seems to be... dividing into wide receivers are getting huge contracts now between 20 and 30 million a year.
Yeah.
And teams seem to be dividing between those who are willing to pay that for a established veteran and those who feel like every draft now and from now and moving forward, because of the way the game has changed in college ranks, is loaded with receivers.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have teams like the Green Bay Packers who don't really want to pay even maybe the best receiver in the game
$30
million.
Right. And
because you can reload in the draft.
You're hoping.
Year after year.
Mm-hmm.
They're funny because it's almost like they're just trolling people now. It is amazing to everybody, me included, I think, that somehow they came out of that first round with two picks and didn't take a receiver.
Yeah.
I mean, they made what are probably good picks, like, sure. Especially like Devontae Wyatt as their second one. And what happened to them, I'm fully convinced, the top six receivers, which I think were the top tier, really, all went in the first 20 picks, and they were picking like 22 or 23.
Mm-hmm.
I think Treylon Burks was probably, I'm just guessing, probably the last guy on the top tier. And so for most teams, and so maybe that's the case for Green Bay. I would actually put Jahan Dotson 6th, but he had already gone to 16. So Treylon Burks went 18th. 18 picks in, all six of those receivers were off the board. I think Green Bay did the right thing there.
Yep.
They didn't panic.
Well, they didn't stretch. They didn't. Yeah. They go, this is a position we need.
Don't panic.
Yeah. Don't panic.
Take George Pickens right here. Right.
Don't fill it just to fill it.
So they waited until day two. They actually did trade up a little bit. The fact that they traded up to the second pick of the day makes me believe that they probably tried to trade up with us at the first pick of the day, because why wouldn't you start there?
Uh-huh.
It's because that's the way to guarantee you got the guy.
Yep.
Which makes me believe that the Bucks had, well, they've pretty much said so, no interest in moving farther down from 33.
No, but I thought it was a great move.
So they moved up, Green Bay moved up to get Christian Walker. Anyway, back to my point. Kansas City didn't want to have to pay Tyreek Hill $30 million.
Yeah.
They drafted somebody. They drafted a receiver, not in the first round, and they've added a couple others.
But they also have a quarterback who can throw.
Yeah, so we'll find out.
You know, that helps, too.
Miami, you're making, throwing some shade at Tua there.
Well.
But Miami saw the value in Tyreek Hill and was willing to pay the money. Debo Samuel started making noise about wanting to be traded.
Yeah.
It seems like they're kind of getting things back together.
Yeah,
John
Lynch is trying to figure out, you know, what exactly is the issue.
But there were definitely
having
teams interested.
Oh, of course. Why wouldn't there be?
Well, because he's a great player, right? But the reason that Kansas City moved on, Baltimore traded Marquise Brown, Hollywood Brown, didn't want to pay him. I think he got 20-something million per year immediately with Arizona.
And he said he would have stayed for like 22 million.
Yeah, so they didn't want to pay that.
No.
They'll draft somebody. Tennessee traded A.J. Brown.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to pay him. So you're going to have
that's not good when your head coach says he's not being traded as long as I'm head coach.
Yeah.
And a week later, player gone.
Yeah, I guess we know who's running the
show
there.
Yeah, okay.
But they drafted Treylon Burks, who is, if you don't like mock drafts, so you didn't read as many as I did.
No, no.
But you read enough mock drafts, you see him compared to A.J. Brown.
Yeah, I look at him and I always laugh because it's like going to Baskin Robbins and choosing 32 flavors. It's going to change every week depending on what your what your mood is, and it cracks me up because when it's all over with, you know, every analyst is going, well, he's a pretty good guy, blah 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 blah, but they never throw their board up and go, wow, I really missed. And honestly, you don't know whether you have a good draft or not until 3 years down the road.
They do grade them immediately after.
Well, yeah,
there are. You can find
who's good. That's okay. Now you're going to get me cranked up because that's the other thing. People grading.
I miss this, Jeff. I want to get you cranked up.
No, but people grading a draft before a player has even stepped on the field, and you're they got a B plus. They got a B. So let me get this right. You write for a living, which is a great. I'm happy for you. But come on, you got guys sitting back. You know, you walk back to the other side of this building, and you see guys looking at tape over and over, and So I just think it's funny how they go, oh, it's a C-. But
I know.
No one ever, ever goes back to what they wrote 3 years previously and say.
That's not true. They do.
Do you think?
I've read those articles.
All right. I've
read them.
Okay.
I'll find one later. Next year, I'll find.
And do they say things like, boy, I really blew
it? Yes. Okay. Yes. They 100% do.
All right.
But not everybody's going to ever see that article.
No.
They're going to read their mock drafts. They're not necessarily going to see the article where they go, I didn't get that right.
Is it kind of like back in the day in the newspaper when they made a mistake? They did the correction and they buried
12.
It. Yeah, it's like down in the corner, a little small print correction.
No, but I mean, the attention span is fleeting on the internet.
I totally understand its entertainment value. I totally understand its interesting reading. I totally understand why if the Buccaneers are your team, as a fan, that you're reading everything on Buccaneers.com. You're reading everything you can to say. And then the beauty about sports is you get to have an opinion. Right or wrong, you get to have an opinion as a fan. So
yes,
I get it. It just drives me nuts.
I agree with both your points.
Am I getting salty? Have I been doing this too long?
You need some, salt. You need to get rid of some salt.
I guess, yes. Go ahead.
I like it. I like what you're saying. Draft grades are ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
After the draft, I got home on the first night at 1:30 or 2 or something in the morning.
And?
Started Googling draft grades.
Scott, we got to get you
Saturday night, got home.
We got to get you a life.
Saturday night, got home around 9. Start Googling draft grades.
What I do.
I read them, Jeff. I know they're ridiculous, but I read them. That's why they do them.
Listen, we have a thing called clips, and that is any article written about the Buccaneers, the PR staff, usually it's a PR intern, goes through, scours the internet, all the newspapers, and it's all in one easy read for those of us in the building that get it. So I read the clips every day. So after the first draft, I started reading all of that, and I was shaking my head, going, seriously? But it is an interesting read. It's an interesting thought process.
The thing, I am more, I like a draft grade read if they're looking at what happened and deciding, okay, that was probably a good fit, or I like that.
Yeah.
The ones that I don't really like, when their entire grades are based on how closely teams match their own rankings of players.
Yeah.
So you are, if you are, let's see, if you're the, okay, if you're the Cowboys drafted Tyler Smith, a tackle out of Tulsa, he's probably about the fifth tackle taken. Joe Smith, the NFL analyst, had put out his big board and had Tyler Smith ranked 50th. The Cowboys take him 24th,
right?
Therefore, that was a bad pick.
Yeah.
And they're great.
Well, did you see the story about the Cowboys draft room that Jerry Jones happened to, well, they said it was Jerry Jones, but anyways, the camera in the draft room went to the board, the draft board, and somebody from WFAA, I think it's TV or radio, isolated it and was able to see.
Oh, jeez.
And as it turned out, the guys that they had on the board, the Giants ended up picking them. You Google the story. It was fascinating.
Well, the Giants had picks 5 and 7,
they're
in good spot.
But it's interesting that the people that the Cowboys wanted, not that the Giants saw the draft board and jumped on it. It was just the two of them were going after the same people.
Yeah.
Which is not so uncommon, but I thought it was a great story.
Those are good players. But I like... like I was saying, too many draft grades are just based on, well, they took a guy 25th that I had ranked 40th, so therefore bad.
Sure.
And obviously this team had a different opinion of it than you, and I'm willing to side with the team because they have a team of scouts that have been scouting.
Yes.
They're not going to get every pick right, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, right. And the good news is if you're writing about this or you're doing this and you're wrong, you don't lose your job. Now, if you're a general manager and you're making these picks, it's for real.
Their jobs are on the line.
See ya.
So they have a much.
You get the home version. You get to then become someone grading other people's picks.
Okay, you got salty. It's my turn now.
All right.
So I'm going to tell you another pet peeve about draft reporting.
All right.
And it doesn't have anything to do with grades. I hate the way most people report draft pick traits because they will say, okay, like for instance, the Buccaneers traded down with Jacksonville.
Number 27.
From 27 to 33.
Mm-hmm.
We all know this.
Mm-hmm.
The draft will, and we got picks in the fourth and sixth round. People will report that as the Jaguars traded up and it cost them a second, a fourth, and a sixth. No, it did not. It cost them a fourth and a sixth. The traded up.
Right.
Is implied within that is that the first pick, the 33, is implied within the traded up. They didn't lose pick 33. They improved it to 27. The cost of that was a fourth and a sixth. So they did not trade a second, a fourth, and a sixth to trade up to 27. They traded a second, a fourth, and a sixth for 27. You can either say it that way.
Okay.
They traded their 2, 4, and 6 for R1. Or you could say they traded a fourth and sixth to move up from 27 to 33 to 27.
But if they're picking an earlier number, isn't that up?
Yes, they traded up. That's accurate. But in when you say traded up, you have implied the pick that they traded up from.
Oh, okay.
So you can either say, nobody's ever going to listen to me and stop doing this, but people are going to keep doing it. Like when the Rams traded for Jared Goff, traded up to number one to get Jared Goff in 2016, part of the deal was their first-round pick the following year. There's a bunch of other picks involved as well.
Right.
But it's those picks are commonly reported as the Rams traded two first-round picks to move up to get Jared Goff. No, they didn't. They traded one first round and a bunch of other picks to improve their first from wherever they were to one.
Okay.
So stop saying it that way, analysts.
Wow.
The Buccaneers traded down and gained a fourth and sixth.
Mm-hmm. And got the person that they wanted.
Yeah. So that's a good segue into the Buccaneers draft.
which how'd you feel about not having a first round pick?
I was ecstatic.
Yeah.
It made Fridays a lot easier.
Yeah, well, there was a lot going to go on Friday, but I was at the draft party, and it was...
They probably weren't happy over there.
Well, for whatever reason, I kept thinking, we're going to trade out of here. And earlier, when Jason Light had his pre-draft press conference, he had talked about, you know, the draft wasn't as rich as previous drafts. Mm-hmm. And so that
kind of had good mid-round value.
It had good, yes, good mid-round value.
Yes.
Yeah. And that made me think, you know, if you're at 27, you're really kind of, you know, you're down near the bottom, which is good. You know, you don't, you know, I was jokingly saying, I remember going to the draft party and we had a great time because we had the first pick. So on April, we were like, yay. But then during the season, it sucked. So I'd much rather be doing what we were doing with. But then you would have loved it because, you know, had all these people there, and as soon as we went off the board, we traded, gone. People got up and started leaving. and I give TJ credit. He goes, well, don't forget, they could trade back in. Yeah. And I'm like going, yeah, no, I'm texting him, yeah, that's not happening.
So the story there that they
– yeah,
I like it when the general manager or anybody else, so head coach that goes up there, feels free enough to kind of give – the actual like information, because they're not always going to share what happened there, right? But I think it's very believable. In fact, I consider it a fact that when they were sitting there at 27, because the trade happened shortly after we went on the clock.
Sure.
So it didn't happen before that.
No.
They've said there were five players they had graded very similarly that they would have been
happy
to get any one of them. They did not name the other ones.
Nope.
But the fact that there was only one left, they then said after the pick, that there was only one left. So you can look at the draft and get an idea who some of those players were.
Yeah.
And I also think they are being completely honest when they say they would have happily taken Logan Hall at 27.
Yeah.
From amid that group of five.
Right. But they felt that they could get him pick up a couple rounds.
They probably would have had a couple. Well, or if they didn't get him, they would have had one of the other four.
Yeah.
Because there were only, you know, often when you trade with a team, they're willing to tell you who they're trading up for.
Sure.
And so, like, I think that happened with the trade when we traded down two spots and picked up Vernon Hargrave. It was maybe Bears. Bears traded up for Leonard Floyd that year from 11 to 9. We went from 9 to 11, but we knew they were taking Leonard Floyd. They told us we were taking Leonard Floyd, so we didn't have to worry about that. We only had to worry about the Giants picking 10th, and they took Eli Apple. And then we took Vernon Hargrave. Neither of those really worked out, but that's neither here nor there. So you're really worried about picks 28, 29, 30, 31, and 32. That's only five picks. So unless your five guys go bang, 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 which doesn't happen. That's part of the calculus when you're in that room. You're like,
sure,
there's no way all five of these guys are going to go in a row. So one of them at least will be there, and that was the case. I still think, however, that if they had stayed at 27, Logan Hall was a very serious consideration. Yeah. There were a couple other guys I liked too, but from that group of five, they might have just taken Logan Hall.
Well, that's because he can play so many different positions.
And then you pick up a fourth and a sixth.
Mm-hmm.
And you get Cade Otton with the fourth, which you either wouldn't have gotten or would have had to sweat it out to pick 133. And then you wouldn't have been able to take the punter that they took at 133, Jake Camardo.
Mm-hmm.
So that helped. And then the sixth was used to trade back for another trade, to trade from 60 to 57 in round two before taking Luke Getteke.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was a great trade.
And
we were happy at the time.
If I'm grading our draft, I give us a B+, maybe an A, because I think who they drafted has a chance to actually make the team, and that's
and
help the team
and have an impact role this year. Did you read my post-draft?
I did.
Story, because that was basically the gist of that story.
And that's how I felt, is that there's going to be opportunities for starters,
which is hard when this team is so loaded.
Very, very hard.
Like last year, our second round pick was Kyle Trask. Mm-hmm. That could work out for the future, but there was no way he was going to contribute last year.
No, but you look at, you know, the
Logan Hall.
Well, yeah,
probably will start. This team could still bring back Ndamukong Suh if both sides want it, but even if he does, he's going to play a lot.
Yeah.
For sure. There's no doubt.
Sure.
Luke Getteke, they already said he's going to compete for the starting left guard spot.
Yeah.
So, third round.
Rashad
White. Wait, second. Yeah, then third round, Rashad White. I mean, he basically replaces Ronald Jones.
Can you believe how tall he is?
He's a very upright runner.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, yes. And they love his speed, his burst of energy.
I was hoping we would take a running back, and I was hoping we would specifically take a running back who's very strong in the passing game.
Yeah.
And I did not know much about Rashad White, right? So I looked at some other guys and putting them in mock drafts and stuff, like the guy that Buffalo took. I can't think of who's the Minnesota running back? Dalvin Cook.
Oh, okay.
His younger brother was drafted in the second round by the Bills. That's a guy I thought, hey, we should be. So I see this guy. I look at his bio. He's like 6'2", 210 or something like that.
Yep.
6'2", 220. I'm like, oh, well.
And he also has.
But then I find out he just happens to be a very tall running back who is very good in the passing game.
Yeah. That's the claim to fame for him is he's got really soft hands and he can catch. And what do we need as a running back that can catch out of the backfield?
We could use a natural pass catcher. Uh-huh. He averaged 10.6 yards per catch at Arizona State, which is very good for a running back.
So, 48 receptions.
Cade Otton. We have only two tight ends on the roster right now before the draft.
The other thing I like, every one of these guys seems so down to earth.
Hmm.
And just like I'm thinking, they're going to fit right in. They're going to fit right in.
I think from talking to John Spytek about a number of these guys over the last few years, I honestly think after meeting with them, they like them. What they want to hear, what they want to find out is, does this guy love football?
Yeah.
And does this guy love football?
And then you take
because that's the first thing he says to me about everybody we pick.
Yeah. Well, and then in the tight ends, one of the biggest things in this offense for a tight end is you have to be able to block.
Right. He's a true Y.
And he's a really great blocker.
So
he finishes it.
He's a Y. Mm-hmm. He's an inline blocker, but he's got reliable hands.
Yeah.
As I think Spytek said, he's not the athlete that Gronk is getting downfield and making all those plays, but who is? Who is? He still has an opportunity to be a true two-way tight end, which are not easy to find.
No.
And that's not really what Cam Brait or Cody McIlroy, only two other tight ends on the roster, are.
Right.
So at the moment, he's your starting Y. Mm-hmm. Now, Gronkowski comes back, the role changes, but he's still going to play a lot.
Sure.
And then your punter, you don't draft a punter in the fourth round if you don't think probably he's going to win the job.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
No offense to Bradley Pinion.
No.
Or Sterling.
Well, you don't waste a fourth round pick and not.
Yeah. You expect the guy to be your punter. Yeah. So that, obviously, he's going to have a big role.
And the knock on him was he struggled on punts during big games. However, in the championship game, he answered the bell.
I had not heard that knock.
Yeah.
He was great in the SEC championship.
It's a mind thing that he managed to get over.
His overall numbers are fantastic. Uh-huh. And he's a great kickoff guy.
Yeah.
Not just, he can boot it out of the back of the end zone if you want the touchback.
But he can put it where
he can do the mortar kick and you try to trap him inside the 20. So I like that we're thinking that strategically about that, and we might see more of those mortar kicks this year.
What I truly liked, Keft?
I think it's Keft.
Keft. You got to love a guy, all right? He's from Iowa. Typical Midwestern thing, right? We're going to kind of have a party. So where do you have the party? You have the party in your garage. And I'm watching him taking the phone call. And I love the rakes on the wall. I love, the camping chairs they're sitting in.
That's funny.
But what I loved even more about it is that everybody's in a hoodie or a sweatshirt. But not Crow. No. He's in shorts and a T-shirt. And so you got to love
a guy. So the garage door was open?
I'm not sure. But having grown up in the Midwest, it makes perfectly good sense to me that if you're going to throw a party and it's still kind of chilly or rainy,
you do it in the garage.
And I totally love that, and I just love that mentality.
I would need 3 days to clean my garage off.
Well, there's that. But it was just one of those – you know, so much, there's so much glitz and glamour anymore when you watch the draft, and everybody has all this and that, but it just looked like he had his family around him, and they were, you know, genuinely excited about what was going on.
That is his full legal first name, by the way.
It is, Kyle, yes. Kyle. And named after his grandfather, I believe.
So he's obviously known for his blocking. You can see, I think he had 12 career catches or something like that. So he's clearly being drafted because of his blocking.
Sure.
And he's like, I love blocking. Yeah. I'm paraphrasing. He's like, I love blocking. That's what I love to do. So cool.
It is.
And then Jason says about the other tight end. No, he said this about Luke Goedeke, the guard.
Goedeke is.
He's like, his hobbies are weightlifting and that's about it. He's all football.
He's a kid from Wisconsin. Makes me think of Paul Gruber, just a football guy.
There you go.
I'm just saying that it's just.
If you're gonna compare,
what I mean by that is
no, it's a very complimentary comparison.
Yeah, but it's the demeanor. It's okay. I love football. You know, for me to get here, you know, I wasn't a blue chip player. I had to figure out how to get where I am. You know, he only had one offer. He was a tight end. Then he became an O lineman. Cut up his own tape and sent his own tape out to he wanted to go to Wisconsin, be a Badger. He tried to walk on
That's an offensive he couldn't get a
scholarship.
Sean Murphy Bunting had a similar story on his way to Central Michigan.
Right. And so, you know, I pull for guys like that, you know, guys that, you know, they just want to get to the NFL. They're excited about it. And I mean, seriously, if you're getting drafted right now and you're getting drafted by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers,
that's exciting.
It's very exciting because, you know, you're going to have to work your butt off to hang. But still, if you can do it, the reward is going to be humongous.
So we're kind of doing the big picture thing.
Uh-huh.
When you talk about the Bucs draft, I feel like the reaction from the various people grading it and analyzing it was, okay, yeah, fine. They picked good players that they needed. But then there were just too many other big storylines. There were like 10 teams that had multiple first-round picks. We didn't pick in the first round. The quarterbacks fell. The receiver run, what the Packers did. Mm-hmm. There was just all the trades of A.J. Brown and Marquise Brown and
we had a sleep.
What's his name? Baker Mayfield not getting traded.
Yeah.
There's just too many storylines that were more interesting. We just had a good draft.
I mean,
I can prove it, Jeff, because the NFL sent out notes and like on the draft research notes afterwards. Here's the Atlanta one. It's 3 pages long. No, 4 pages long.
Uh-huh.
Wait, 5 pages long.
Okay.
I don't know why I have the Ravens in here. That's an accent. But the Saints are 2 pages long. Carolina's
A paragraph?
3 pages long. Ours is 1 page, not even a page. Look.
It's almost a paragraph.
It's like a half a page. Most of it is just every team, they list all their picks and one little note about them. And then there's one note about Logan Hall.
Yeah.
Like, this Falcons draft... The notes go on and on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I wanted to talk about their draft because I think the Falcons and the Panthers did pretty well. The Saints are so every year they are all in, which is impressive, I guess, and they have been very good for a long time.
Right. You know,
you just keep waiting for them to do the rebuild draft, and they don't. They trade away picks to move up.
Yeah.
They traded to move up to get Olave, which in retrospect was probably a good move because of the run on the receivers was really happening. So if they needed him, they needed to get him. They drafted Trevor Penning like everybody thought they would, the immediate replacement for Teron Armstead, even though there's some questions about his movement skills. He's a very good run blocker.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to need to be a pass blocker, although they are becoming more of a running team. Some people didn't like the Alante Taylor where they took him in the second round, the cornerback or safety. He's listed here as a cornerback, but I thought he was a safety. Just their draft was kind of okay. I think Atlanta knocked it out of the park.
Yeah,
unfortunately, I hate that.
No.
They sat right where they were and got the first receiver.
But they need a lot of help.
Drake London is a big contested catch and tackle breaking guy. There's like 20 notes about him here about how he breaks tackles and everything.
Sure.
Ebikadi is a guy that I personally mocked to the Bucks in my last mock at 27. Uh-huh. I think getting him at 38 is awesome. And that's as much as receivers are need for them. They've needed pass rushers for years and mm-hmm. haven't been able to. They've tried signing guys and they didn't really work out. They had 18 sacks as a team last year. I think second lowest was 29. Wow. I mean, they were by far the worst pass rush team. This Trey Anderson from Montana State that they got 58, mm-hmm. scouts love him. He's just unbelievably athletic. He has some developing to do, but he could end up being great. And then I think they got Desmond Ridder. Getting Desmond Ridder at 74. Okay, so I'm of the opinion Desmond Ridder is going to work out. Uh-huh. He's going to be a long-time starter for them.
Nice.
If he is,
you think, huh?
If he is, they just did what Seattle did when they got Russell Wilson.
Oh.
And the drafting of Russell Wilson in the third round and them immediately becoming good like the next year and having him on his rookie contract for 5 years.
Gave them opportunities.
It was we all know now. We all talk about it all the time, like we were the first to have the idea, but a good quarterback on his rookie contract is absolutely the single most valuable thing you can have in the NFL.
Yeah.
Because if you have a good quarterback on a second contract or a third, you're paying him $25, $30, $35, $40 million now. To get that same thing for whatever it is, $5 million.
Yeah.
That gives you tons of money to spend all over, which is what Seattle did in that time and started this people realizing that this is the most valuable thing. And they spent money on pass rushers like Michael Bennett, and they spent money on their secondary.
Put it all together, and they won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, yeah, and they were in two.
Yeah.
So nearly won two, right?
Yeah.
So I think that Desmond Ridder is going to hit. I hope he doesn't because I don't want our division rivals to have this great commodity. This, to me, is just a great, great, great draft. I like D'Angelo Malone, the guy they got in the pick number 82. I think he's a pass rusher that, you know, he's a little raw, but he could develop into something. And a lot of scouts really like Tyler Allgeier, the running back they got in BYU.
Yeah.
They hit a lot of their needs and hit them very well, I think.
Now, it's just a question of whether they hit.
Well, I mean, they, right. We don't know.
No.
But,
no.
You know, we're projecting. We like what the Bucks, though, but we don't know. I like what the Falcons did. I think they had one of the best drafts, and I don't like that.
One of the things that I like about Cade Otton, is it?
Cade Otton.
Cade was he was wearing a Buccaneer hat during his conference, his press conference, and he was asked where he got it, and it was given it to him. It was given to him at the combine, and he held on to it
just in case.
I
wonder how many hats he got.
Well, that was my now had I been there, that would have been my follow up question, and then my other question is I want to find out how many hats we gave out.
Yeah.
Because I want to know if that's like a, you know.
You can give each one?
Well,
probably. Why would we give them to Cade and not
Well, it's a sign. Like,
maybe every team does
You know,
that.
You get ready.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is he's a young man, but he's married.
Oh, okay.
So coming out of Seattle down into.
So he's probably mature.
He's very mature.
So, I like that pick a lot. I really like that pick because, now listen, I'm going to preface this.
Okay.
When you do a bunch of mock drafts, when you post a bunch of mock drafts.
Did you hit this one?
Just let me get that.
All right.
A lot of us start doing it. I started doing them in February once a week, but I was alternating because doing one every week was a bit of overkill. So I do a normal first-round draft, and then I do something a little bit different, then I go back.
Yeah.
I am never going to be the guy who says, hey, go look at the mock draft I did in February. I had us picking this guy. Like, if I had predicted Logan Hall in a February mock draft, I would not take credit for that unless I stuck with it. It's your last mock draft that matters. That's the one. You can't put up 10 mock drafts.
No, and then say,
and
hey,
then go,
I
hey,
had,
look, yeah, in yeah. my fourth one,
so
I had a...
Your last one you had...
No, I did not.
Oh.
But when I did, one of the other gimmicky drafts I did was instead of drafting, predicting the whole first round...
Operative word, gimmicky.
Exactly. I did one where... I drafted the second round based on what I had done in the mock draft first round the week before.
Yeah.
I had another one where, like, 8 mocks in, I put a restriction on myself that I had to pick somebody for each team that I'd never picked for them before.
Yeah.
So gimmicky.
Okay.
One of them, I tried to predict who the Bucks would draft with each of their picks in the draft. So rounds 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, right? I predicted Cade Otton in the fourth round.
Wow.
Now, it was pick 133 because I didn't know we were going to have pick
You didn't know they were going to be moving around.
And I didn't even get close to any of the other picks.
Wow.
And I did not get our pick. I had Ebba Cady.
Uh-huh.
He could have been one of the 5 guys that we liked, though.
That's true.
I don't know that.
And they
or if I did,
and
I
they're not telling us either.
Yeah, so I only got the first two picks in my last mock draft right.
All right.
And I looked at a bunch of others, and most people got about 3.
So you're four. So you're kind of.
It just didn't go the way most people thought it would.
Well, how can you? Because things are changing. Because if someone take if you you can say oh, this is the
it's
guy
a domino.
Yeah, this is the guy I want, but something happens and your guy you know, and now well, all of a sudden you gotta go to the plan B.
Got the first two right, and then as soon as as soon as Derek Stingley went third, well, that blew up my third pick, obviously, and it also blew up my, like, 10th pick where I gave it to or ninth, whatever, to Seattle. And then, you know, and then the fact that none of those teams took the tackles meant the tackle run didn't start till six. So if you put two tackles on the top five, you're dead there.
So when the draft is happening, are you keeping an eye on your mock draft going,
I felt very good after the first two. I was happy I went with Walker first.
Do you have a puffy chest?
And then I could, no.
Okay.
And then after that, as soon as Stingley went third, I'm like, oh, well, I'm in trouble. And I didn't even look at it. I could remember when each team picked, I'm like, that's not what I did.
Yeah.
The only one I kind of got right was Trevor Penning to the Saints. I just didn't have it at the – they originally had like 17 and 19 or something like that, and they traded up to get Olave, and then they used the second of their picks for Penning. I did have him taking Penning, but at the first of the original two picks.
I think, too, I am starting to believe that if you get drafted by a team that's good, you have a better shot.
Of course.
Just because.
Especially for quarterbacks.
It's just everybody around you.
100%.
You know, and you learn to be in the NFL.
That's particularly true for quarterbacks.
Yeah.
The only other thing I would say is I consistently had the Baltimore Ravens taking Tyler Linderbaum at 15. They ended up taking him at 25. That was after they traded Hollywood Brown to get a pick, and then they traded down a couple more spots. But in my last mock draft, after having to pick Tyler Linderbaum in like every mock draft, in my last mock draft I did something different. I gave him Jordan Davis at 14, and everybody actually thinks they would have taken Jordan Davis at 14, and that's what the Eagles thought was going to happen, which is why they traded from 15 up to 13 to get ahead of Baltimore to take Jordan Davis.
Wow.
And then Baltimore's just like, okay, cool, we'll just take Kyle Hamilton, a top five talent who's the best safety on the board, and we need a safety.
So.
Baltimore just sits there and let it come to them, and they draft great every year.
Well,
Jeff, we've been doing this for almost an hour now,
actually it's been 55 minutes.
And
we're keeping
poor Bree waiting.
All right,
longer than we said we would. So let's wrap this part up.
All right.
Get her. Is that cool with you?
Cool. Good.
All right, we'll be back in a second.
The Salty Dogs.
And we're back here on the Salty Dogs podcast for our second segment, which we like as we always bring on a guest.
Yeah.
I'm still Scott Smith.
And I'm still Jeff Ryan. And the good news is we get to bring the guests on in person. This is kind
of
cool.
Right. We've been doing a lot of Zooms.
2 years, Zooms and social distancing. We're still kind of far apart.
So this is a podcast about the Buccaneers. About Buccaneers football for the most part. So
yeah.
If you're listening to this, you're almost certainly a Buccaneers fan.
Well, it's the salty version of covering the Buccaneers.
So assuming you out there listening right now are a Buccaneers fan, you're going to want to get to know this person, Brianna Dix, our new team staff writer, team writer and reporter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just started last week. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Doing well, how are you?
Great.
We're going to help the Bucs fans get to know you here.
She's sitting here with a big smile on her face, and she has no idea what she just got herself into.
Oh, she'll be fine.
Perfect.
She'll be fine. Hey, Jeff, this is a person who started her new job after a very rushed move from Texas here on the first day of the draft.
It's funny.
Who's like, welcome to the team.
In the line of fire.
Yeah. Get ready to work for like 60 of the next 72 hours, okay?
Yeah. As I said to Brianna, I said...
Who we can call Brie, right?
Or Brie.
Yep.
I said, so you got it by baptism by fire. And that pretty much summed it up
Precisely,
for you.
Precisely, yep.
How was your draft experience?
It was great. I think it basically embodies just what the NFL is, and that's being adaptable and being flexible. But I think for me, it was good to just jump in, get into the routine, and start things right away. And that's what, no better way to do that than the NFL draft.
Okay, you can read all of Brianna's stuff on Buccaneers.com, and I would suggest doing so. That she's actually put up a lot of stuff this week, and I will say two things about Bree that I think you're going to discover as Buccaneer fans. She knows football really well, and she was putting, if this first week is any indication, she's going to put in a ton of work.
So
you're going to be reading a lot of her stuff, and you're going to like it because she really knows football.
And so my question is, who are you, and how come you know football so much?
Oh, all right, JR, I'm liking the question. It's funny because I grew up, didn't have any brothers, and my mom, my sister wanted absolutely nothing to do with sports. But I was the I was the convert and I was the recruit. So growing up, I spent every Sunday with my dad watching the NFL.
The Cowboys.
And yes. Sorry. And it just kind of became part of my fabric. But I think really around high school, I started to realize that it was a lot more than just a hobby, and it was a passion. I mean, every time the game went on from the first snap of the ball till the last whistle, I was enthralled. And I really decided that I wanted to wholeheartedly pursue football as my career path. So I went to Dallas Baptist University, unfortunately, a school that doesn't have a football team.
Good pick.
So from that
yeah,
standpoint,
right?
They have an incredible baseball program.
Yeah. Oh,
she
yeah.
was forced to watch and write a lot about baseball, which she has since revealed to us isn't really a big thing for her.
Yeah. Had to work 27 baseball games.
You
and
should see the look
I
on her face
loathe
right now.
Baseball. So, yeah, I still have PTSD from that, but it's fine. And so during my time at DBU, I started an NFL podcast, tried any way I could to network, interviewed former Cowboys, and then got a internship with the Dallas Cowboys in 2016 as a game day event presentation intern. And then that's how I got connected with my boss with D210 and then started writing and reporting and doing on-camera stuff, covering the Cowboys for the previous 4 years. So,
and this is like in the locker room,
yes,
with the team, same thing as our main reporters are doing. You've had all that experience.
Yes. So it's now joining the NFC South.
And wow.
It's exciting to finally get to see a functional offense.
Wow. Shots across the bow. Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, it wasn't – last year they improved significantly, but wasn't Dallas's defense pretty bad?
Yeah, really bad.
So the defense was historically bad in 2020.
Yeah.
Gave up a record number of rushing yards. I mean, it didn't matter, like, inside zone, outside zone. Like, teams were gashing the Cowboys on the ground. But then Dan Quinn came 2021 and revitalized the defense. So the defense was actually the strength down the stretch for the Cowboys
last season.
Yeah. And the offense started out. I mean, they played well against the Bucks in week one. As teams started using that too high shell, as the team progressed and they weren't able to run the ball, the offense sputtered.
They weren't able to run the ball against too high?
No.
Because that's when you should be able to run it.
No, yeah. Against the light box, they should have been able to do that, utilize cover, you know, the cover two beaters, the middle of the field with those intermediate routes. Yeah, couldn't.
It's funny because, contrastingly, the same thing was happening to Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, and that's why their offense was not producing in the early going last year. But they managed to adjust to it. They did a good job of adjusting to it and did figure out a lot of ways to beat too high safety.
Right.
And they ended up being as prolific as ever on offense. I guess Dallas just wasn't able to adjust as well.
Right. Well, and it's funny because in the season opener against Tampa, I mean, like so many teams do in the NFL, I mean, the philosophy with Tampa is you're not going to run the ball against us. And
right.
So the Cowboys didn't even try against against Vita Vea, against Sue. They were like, okay, we're just going to abandon the run. But they were able to move the ball down the field.
Yeah.
They were able to do things to keep the offense going. And then during the second half of the season, after they played the Denver Broncos, that I guess produced kind of that blueprint, they weren't able to do that.
Amazing. Did you notice that she immediately said, you can't run the ball against us? immediately she goes, yeah, you can't run the ball against us. What is
I also noticed, Jeff, or remember that when we were about to start this, and I asked you if where Bree was, and you said, I just passed her desk, and she was watching tape.
She was. She was looking at, I believe you were looking at, not that I'm looking at your computer, but I kind of picked up on it was your, I think you were looking at our draft picks.
Oh my gosh, great eyesight.
Hey,
Jeff, look at you.
Let me tell you something right here. Writers do not like when people are looking over their shoulders at their screens.
Okay. When I come out of my office, I have no choice but to look at all these
–
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just telling you. I don't know if Bree shares this with me, but
you know,
I do not like people reading over my shoulder.
I didn't. I just walked by and just happened to notice it looked like Central Michigan shirt.
Yep.
I
was watching some Luke Getteke.
But the only reason why I know that is because I was looking at that stuff last week during the week.
Oh, you're a tape
cruncher
too, huh?
Well, no, I just like to see, you know, when you know, because of our draft picks, I didn't know where you were going to go with all of this. So I thought, well, maybe I better look at some of this, some of the tape. And
you still didn't know what you were talking about.
No. But I faked it perfectly. it's awesome. So, what is your what's your biggest takeaway after 8 days being here at the Buccaneers? What's your biggest takeaway?
I think one of the biggest things that why I wanted to become part of the Tampa Bay organization is that it's not just an organization that preaches family, and that's something that this organization really embodies, and I've been so overwhelmed just by the response that I've gotten from not only my fellow employees now, but also just the other beat writers in Tampa. And I think that's something that the rest of the NFL doesn't have, and not only that, but this is an organization that is at the forefront of inclusivity in the league and advocacy for women. And that was one of the things that really brought me in. And I've been so excited just to get to experience that firsthand. It's not just, you know, something they put on the wall, but they really actually incorporate that into everything that they do. And I think that is why this team wins and why they've built that winning culture is because they do prioritize that.
Jeff, can you just take the recording of that whole soliloquy, and we'll just put it out as a commercial.
It's a great recruiting tape. But the only reason why I ask that is, you know, you're coming from...
We all agree with all of that.
Yeah, well, you're coming from Texas, and everybody knows everything's bigger and better in Texas, and that you're covering the Cowboys and all their Americans team. However, all that being said, here you are in Tampa, Florida, and becoming a Buccaneer. And so I'm just curious how you've been kind of putting it together. How are you learning this team so quickly? Because you spent so many years with the Cowboys.
Oh, so I am a very, as I've discussed with you, I am a visual learner. So I've been going through the 2021 tape of the Bucs on NFL Game Pass, but also I wrote out the entire depth chart, and I have that at my desk in my apartment. I have it taped to the wall, and then I printed off the coaching directory with all of the coaching staff's faces, and then I printed off the entire player roster also, and I have them cut out and categorized by position on my desk.
So
I look at those every day.
Well, you know, when I come out of my office, I see a flashcard go up. And I see her hands over her eyes. She's trying to figure out what's going on. It is...
I got to tell a little story.
Sure, go ahead.
To compare and contrast, when I first started with the Buccaneers, which I don't know if you knew this, but it was 1992. It was a long time ago.
I decided if I should refrain from saying this, but
she wasn't
just
born
to give
yet.
You some context, I was born in 95.
My fourth year.
So, yeah.
And thank you so much, Bree, for joining the Salty Dogs.
For the last time ever. So I had finished an internship with the Chiefs, and I had moved to Phoenix, Arizona to spend some time with my dad, who was living out there. I'm from St. Louis, so that's where I grew up. And I got a call about a month later. I had sent out my resumes to all the teams. I got a call a month later from the Buccaneers, Rick Odioso, the former PR director, because I was trying to get into the PR department. So it's a phone call and then a phone interview. I later came in for an in-person interview. So I knew I was going to have this interview with him. And Rick says, yeah, I just got back from like a tour we did to some of the other communities around here with Sam. And I'm like, I don't know who Sam is. Who is Sam? I'm faking it. I'm just like, okay, yeah, that sounds great.
I was on that tour.
Yeah.
I was on that
tour.
That
was the Sam in question was Sam Weich, who had just been hired as the team's new head coach. So you did all that to prepare for starting here. I didn't even learn the head coach's name before doing an interview.
Well, that's because it was before the internet.
It was before the internet. That is 100% true. I mean, I would have had to find an old Sporting News or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or go to the library.
And now you just, it's one sec away the Google search engine.
I know. But still, that is a criminal lack of preparation for an interview for a job I really wanted.
So talk about,
I must have knocked it out of the park.
Well,
to get the job.
Talk about BSing them all the way through, you know.
I know all of our head coaches now.
Good job. They're all, there's pictures
I can
down in the
lobby. I can name them all in what years and all that.
I think I can name them also.
Okay, go ahead. And the years.
Well, the years would be, it would be John McKay from 76 to 82.
Nope. Wrong. You're already on.
83?
Nope.
84?
Yes.
Okay. Then Lehman Bennett?
Yes. Four.
Up until 87?
Nope.
86?
Yes.
Then it was Ray Perkins?
Ray Perkins. Through?
Midway through?
No.
No. Let me finish. He made it through December of 90.
13 games.
Yes.
13 games of 90.
And 90. Richard Williamson game 14 through the end of the 2000 or the end of the 91 season was Richard Williamson.
No, end of the 90 season. And into, did you say into the 91 season?
Yeah.
Okay.
He finished. He was head coach in the 91 season.
He finished 90.
Correct. But he also was a head coach in 91.
Correct, the entire season.
All right, 92 was Sam Weish.
Through.
He made it all the way through 95.
Correct.
96 was Tony Dungy. Tony Dungy made it all the way through 2000 and 2001.
Correct. The rest is
2002 was John Gruden to 06.
No.
No, wait, 8.
Yes.
Then Raheem Morris. Raheem went 3 years, so that would put him through 11.
Correct. And then there was the one who shall not be named.
And the one I can't remember.
You're a Harry Potter fan.
I have no idea who was there.
He who will not be named.
Those 3 years are a total blank.
2 years.
Well, it felt like three to me.
Greg Schiano.
That would be Greg Schiano. Then followed by Lovie Smith.
So Greg Schiano was 14 and 15.
Mm-hmm. 16 with Lovie Smith.
Greg Schiano was 12, 13, 14.
And Lovie Smith, 15, 16.
No, Greg Schiano was just 12 and 13.
Okay. 14, Lovie Smith.
Right.
15, Lovie Smith. Right. 16, Lovie Smith.
I think Lovie only got 2 years.
2 years? Okay, then it was Dirk Cutter. Dirk Cutter goes 3 years.
Yes.
After Dirk Cutter, it was B.A.
Right.
Bruce Arians goes 3 years. Now we're into Todd Bowles, and he's got a 5-year deal. How's that?
You did all right.
Thanks.
I wouldn't say I wouldn't give it an A.
All right. Okay, a B+. Okay.
Bree, as he was going through those coaches, and he said Tony Dungy went. You put your hand over your heart. And went aw.
Yes, he's just one of my
favorites.
Wait a second.
I thought she put her hand over her chest because I was nailing the head coaches. Are you kidding?
Well, no. She
both.
Specifically
I was both impressed. But also.
Yeah, continue, Brie.
He has a book that I read, but he's a wonderful man of faith, and he's always been, I feel like, a role model in the NFL world just for his character on and off the field. So he's always been somebody that I've admired.
We always love when he comes back to the building here.
Yeah.
He's good. He's also
just very good to people. And mm-hmm. I've told this story before, but so you could hear it. Some years after he had not had been let go as our head coach, but he still lives here at least partly.
He does.
So my father in law, who's since passed away, but was in the line at a McDonald's, and he saw Tony Dungy come in, and he stopped him and said, "Hey, my son-in-law Scott works for the Buccaneers," and he knew who I was, and he said, "Oh," Tony's response immediately was, "Oh, how's Giselle?" Which is my wife's name.
Yeah.
I was impressed by that story. Like, without any pause whatsoever, I wouldn't have known that Tony knew my wife's name.
No.
But he probably knew everybody's wife's name.
I was fortunate enough to do the radio show with him for his whole time he was here. I learned more, you know, and I have to say, underneath Sam, underneath Tony and John Gruden, really laid my foundation of my knowledge of football. Hmm. And Tony was, I loved doing the radio show with him because we would take calls on this show. And I learned to watch Tony listen to what the person was saying, and he'd let them finish, and then he would say, "Are you done?" And they would say, "Yes." And then he would pick apart everything they said, but he would do it very graciously.
Right.
And my other big takeaway from Tony Dungy, and I try to practice this, it doesn't always work, but when something goes south, try to remain calm because you got to do it anyways. Now, I'm not very good at that, but I do try.
That was, Bree, that was actually the whole story of his first season as a head coach, because it was his mm-hmm. first opportunity. Also was, you know, not the first or the second, but not too many African-American head coaches before him.
Right. And he wasn't the first choice here at Tampa.
I think he was Rich McKay's first choice.
I think it was Steve Spurrier they tried to get.
Well, whatever. Anyway, he was the Minnesota defensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
We hired him, and we went 0-5 to start that season.
Yeah.
Lost five straight games under Tony Dungy.
And not pretty.
And he was, the whole time, he was saying to both the players and to the press, don't worry about it. Stick to the plan. Right. It's going to be fine. And then we won six of our last 10 or something like that. And really finished strong, and then the next year we made back to the playoffs for the first time in 15 years. Yeah, and started that season 5-0.
Yeah, 97 season was very
he
magical.
Said, he still says that's his favorite season.
Yeah. I just, that was just because of so many losing seasons.
Right.
That, you know, you realize what, you could see where the team was going to go from there on.
Yeah, it was good.
So,
but, it was good. Okay. So, Bree, have you studied much on Logan Hall since we drafted him?
I have, yes.
So, you know, show off your football knowledge here and tell fans why he's going to be a good fit for us.
I'm excited for him just for, and that's one of the things I love about Tampa is this defensive front. I mean, it's formidable. It's that Bulls one gap attack penetrating style. And I think that's something that Logan Hall is going to excel in. You know, I mean, he predominantly lined up as the three tech, which is what both Bowles and Jason Light said that he's going to primarily do here, but he also provides the flexibility at the five, at the four. So I'm excited to see just what he can bring in certain packages. You know, they have yet to re-sign Adama Sue, but I think he's going to help come in and shore up that defensive front.
Cool.
Wow.
That work for you, Jeff?
Well, so I've got to figure out what the three and the four is.
No. You do need to figure that out.
But yeah, he's a beast.
I'm just thinking there's a number of listeners right now going. Oh.
It's basically a numbering system based on
I understand
shoulders
what
of the
is.
Offensive line.
Right. But
and
I'm
he
just saying.
He brings the great interior pass rush that I feel like this team has lacked.
Gerald McCoy
bit,
was
so.
A three tech for.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, before we go,
what can we expect from you throughout the year? I mean, we know what Scott Smith does, and so, you know, he's the senior writer. So what is going to be your role, and what can the fans look forward to as the season progresses?
Yes, I will be bringing a variety of stories throughout the off season, throughout going into training camp, during the season, post game stuff, previews, do some scouting reports, doing some collaborative work with Scott Smith that I'm excited about. So I'm ready. Wow. I'm ready to go.
No,
we're working, which they can probably help the listeners, but we're trying to come up with a catchphrase, a headline that we're working on. So
for your weekly,
potentially, yes,
like,
for stories that I'll be coming out with every day, little tidbits from training camp from the season.
Easy breezies or something like
that? Yeah, so we've got, that's an intriguing one. But
you
we were thinking. Yeah.
Well, no, it's a Saints.
Brianna's
Blitz.
Okay.
Brianna's Breakdown Bulletin.
Too much.
Yeah. Okay.
The three Bs.
Or either Brianna's Bulletin or Bree's Bulletin or Bree's Breakdown are fine,
because
but I don't like all three of them.
Breakdown or blitz are the only B words that I could think of that
block.
Are football related.
Yeah, but that is, but I don't see how that works.
Okay. Well, she just said...
Around the block with Bree.
Yeah. There you go.
We'll take some suggestions.
Give people your Twitter handle.
Yes, I actually just changed it, but it is at Brianna Dix NFL.
Okay.
And then articles will be up on Buccaneers.com.
D-I-X?
Yes.
When you change that, do all your followers transfer over?
Yes.
Okay, that's good.
They do.
All right.
But if you just go to like the handle that previously, there's no account that pops up, and it says that it doesn't exist.
Okay.
So, yes, new
Brianna
handle.
Dix, it's B-R-I-A-N-N-A-D-I-X,
and then NFL. Yes.
Okay, that's your Twitter handle. I don't do much other social media. Is there anything else we should share, like Instagram or anything? I don't even know what Instagram is, to be honest with you.
I don't know what my handle on, I guess that's what you call it for Instagram, but it's just, I'm on there, Brianna Dix, B-R-I-A-N-N-A, and then Dix. Yeah,
you're fortunate to have a name that's at least unique enough that you could get that. I could not get Scott Smith. That was never going
to
happen.
Oh, yeah. When I initially was trying to find you on Twitter.
I think that's called stalking, not find you.
Yeah, the pre-stalk. I went on there and I put, like, Scott Smith, and there was 50 that popped up. And
dude,
I was like, gosh.
Dude, there's a MMA fighter. There's a former figure skater. The former mayor of Tempe, Arizona. The
TV guy here
bassist,
in Tampa.
I think he may have passed away, but there was a bassist for The Romantics.
No.
I'm a lot of people.
You're it.
Yeah, but oh, I guess I'll let you in on the secret. My actual name is Roger. Scott,
what?
Scott's my middle name. So I'm a little different. Oh, okay. Scott Smith was also the guy who wrote A Simple Plan that they made in that nice movie with Paxton.
Yeah.
I'm everywhere.
Wow.
And we even have another Scott Smith here in the area doing sports. He's a,
on Fox.
He's a broadcaster on Fox.
Yep.
Yeah,
I was here first.
I did find him on there.
He has to be the other Scott Smith because I was here first. That's just the rule.
Well, you definitely trump me, but I will say when I initially, the reason that I first had my last name before my first name as my Twitter handle is the reason I changed it is because I couldn't do just at Brianna Dix.
Like, oh, that was already taken.
And even, like, my middle name is Michelle, so I even tried Brianna M. Dix. That was taken. And back then, I was like, I'm not going to do, like, an underscore or anything crazy. So that's why I just did the last name first, and then decided I'd add in the NFL, spice things up.
All right. Anything else? Bree, you got anything?
One more thing. It's mostly been about football, which is good because obviously she's demonstrated what I said at the top, that she knows football. But just give us like one thing, that a hobby or something that nothing to do with your work or the job, that something in life that brings you joy.
Ooh, I love cooking.
Okay.
Love cooking. I love baking. So you guys will be excited because for birthdays, it's sort of a slinky gift. I make it for people, but then I like to also eat it and mooch off what I make. But I love experimenting with like cookies, brownies, but baking is my specialty, and I make a famous Chex Mix, but also some famous cookies and toffee bars.
Is
Chex Mix baking?
My version is.
Oh,
there are baked items in.
Okay. So you get Honey Nut Chex, and then you make like a butter brown sugar mixture that you bake it, and it basically caramelizes into a toffee. And then I put toasted pecans, and then I drizzle white and milk chocolate over it.
All right.
That sounds like
and
a very decadent.
It is my Super Bowl staple.
Nice. Well, hopefully you're working the Super Bowl, and you won't be making that.
Yeah.
How's that?
But you could bring in some of those toffee bars if you want.
Oh, heck yeah.
Nobody's going to complain.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying, but I don't think it's a coincidence that I get here and then we have a new coffee machine.
Immediately.
In the break. I'm just saying. So I think I've brought
some
good luck.
We did get a new coffee machine, and it is pretty awesome.
Yeah. I'm the guy. She doesn't like baseball. I don't like coffee.
Yeah. Right. We all said each other.
I was the first person to use the coffee machine yesterday.
Oh, how special.
I talked to the guys
so special.
Well, I wanted to see how it worked. It's all touch screen. It's very high tech.
That was the long. I was there too, not drinking coffee. And that was like the longest gathering of people
we had
in the break room in like 2.5 years.
Yeah.
We were just all hanging out for like half an hour.
Yeah, we were just sitting there talking, and then
one of our coworkers had his 18-month-old son in, so he was the center.
Well, he is. Yeah, he was a crowd pleaser.
Really, really likes goldfish.
Yes.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, I think they're kind of overrated personally, but I'm also not 18 months old. So probably would have loved him at that point.
All right, very good.
All right, thank you for being our guest. It won't be the last time. It won't, despite, you know.
Do you have a question?
Are we done?
Oh, you have a question?
I was just wrapping up, Jeff.
Oh, okay.
Is this how this is going to be all year?
Yeah, land a plane. Land a plane.
Okay.
So you got anything else?
Yeah, we have one question. I sent out that tweet. Turns out tweeting to ask for questions for our podcast doesn't really work.
Okay.
It's better when we just talk about it here.
Sure.
We did earlier, and
then
we start getting questions. But, of course, you will not be surprised to know that the one person did send us a question was our good friend from Brazil, Alexander. Bree, he sends in questions pretty much every week.
Aww.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't necessarily, like, use the same person's questions, except he generally asks really good questions.
And we really like him.
He's a nice, seems like a nice guy. So his question this week is actually about you. Ahoy, salty ones. Hope this finds you both well and healthy. Welcome to the crew, Brianna. It is a great time for newcomers, and I'd like to wish you a great, in parentheses, and long time in Tampa. Questions, well, I'll skip this part. He says, glad to hear you guys again. Since you did, thanks for reading. That's what his little, he's playing off Jeff's little tagline. Alexander Nascimento, who, by the way, is from Brazil. His questions to you are, is this the first time you'll be covering a football team? There's three of them, so go ahead with that one.
No. Previously came from covering the Dallas Cowboys.
Right. We're forgiving her for that.
Yeah.
Who is your favorite Bucks player?
Oh, I can't really say that I have a favorite, but I will say for many years, and one of the things that I'm really excited about getting to cover is Lavonte David.
Good choice.
He's been a guy that I've watched and admired for many years, and I absolute menace in the second level of the defense. So I've always followed his career, and so I am very excited to get to cover
him. You will very much like him as a person as well. Yeah. Is he your favorite Buck right now?
Yeah, he's my favorite Buck right now.
He's pretty much everybody's favorite
Buck
right now.
Just awesome.
Genius.
I mean, there's a lot of nice guys in the locker room, but Lavonte has been here so long, and he's always just been a wonderful person.
And one of the things is when we received our Super Bowl rings, he was the one player. Like, I didn't do pictures. I didn't try to do pictures with Tom Brady or any other people because I don't really know them that well. But Lavonte, I wanted that picture.
He was a guy. Yeah.
And I did get that picture, him and I together.
He was the guy that everybody that had been here for a while was going up to.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really especially happy for you.
Yeah, I mean.
He must have heard that about a thousand.
I saw him after the Super Bowl, gave him a big hug, and it was like, dude, you did it.
Will Golston is next.
And Will Golston's the other one. Yeah,
he's also extraordinarily nice
great
guy.
Great guy. Okay. Next question.
And the last one is, I'll tell you, he says he's just asking this question to mess with Jeff and I. This is a conversation we've had a little bit before about who's older. So he says, and who looks younger, Mr. Ryan or Mr. Smith? Careful.
Oh, my God.
Wow, that's a tough one.
He is older than me?
Now, you can't say that. That's not true.
Yes, it is.
Now, how do you figure?
I know you're older than I am.
How do you figure?
Okay. In any case, that's not the question. It's who looks younger.
Okay.
Probably should call it a tie.
I know. I'm like, he's putting me on the spot. Ugh.
We'll get used to it.
To be fair, I have almost no black hair left, so that's probably not helpful in my favor. It's salt and pepper,
I'm
going to
preface
salt.
This by saying I am terrible at guessing ages.
Oh, that's smart.
Like, having nephews and a niece has really helped me as they've grown because I can kind of better gauge
now. You know what three looks like and what four looks
like? But even from the first time that I met both of you, I would say you look in the same range to me.
Fair enough.
Like, I would have guessed you guys are very similar in age.
Like, probably our mid-30s, right? Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
Sure. Okay, good answer.
100%.
All right, Jeff.
I got nothing. But I do appreciate the question because we do argue about this all the time.
Yeah.
But you kind of, you cheated saying that I'm older than you.
That doesn't have anything to do with the question.
Well, you
looks younger.
Yeah, but you planted it in her head.
Well, I think she navigated that minefield fairly well. Right.
Well, everybody says everybody gets mine wrong.
So you're 27.
Yeah. But did you actually know that, though?
Well, you said that you were born in 1995 during
our earlier.
Earlier interview, so just so you know, I do.
I'm not excellent at the math stuff. That's why I majored in broadcast.
All right. Excellent. That was a lot of fun. Thanks. Since you did, thanks for listening.